From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, December 11th, 2020. Three counties in Maine continue to have elevated risk of COVID-19 spread, and two other counties are being closely watched as part of the state's risk assessment system for schools. Today, the Maine Department of Education released the latest update to its color-coded system for advising schools on their relative risk of the virus. York, Androscoggin, and Oxford counties continue to be designated yellow, meaning that schools should consider precautions such as limiting class sizes and suspending after-school activities. The rest of Maine has been labeled as green, but state officials are closely monitoring Kennebec and Cumberland counties. Both have seen increased case and positivity rates over the past week. And despite several outbreaks connected to schools, public officials continue to say that schools are relatively safe and have limited evidence of virus transmission. Well, the first shipments of a COVID-19 vaccine are expected to arrive in Maine next week, and the Mills administration announced today that it has submitted a request for a second allotment. Patty White has the latest on how many doses Maine is expecting and where they'll go.
The first shipment that Maine receives will contain 12,675 doses, says state CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah.
That's enough for the first dose for 12,675 individuals.
Those doses will be administered to the highest priority group, healthcare workers most at risk for coming into contact with a patient with COVID-19 or with infectious materials that could harbor the virus. Last week, the CDC identified the first several hospitals from Portland to Presque Isle that will receive the vaccine. On Friday, the state provided details about how those doses will be distributed to other hospitals. Dr. Shah says some changes were necessary.
We've been able to refine it a little bit more and recognize that, for example, some hospitals may have gotten initially an allocation of 975, which, for example, may have been more than the entire staff at the hospital.
The first allocation to the state will be distributed among seven hospitals. Maine Medical Center in Portland will receive the highest amount with 1,885 doses. Northern Light Mercy and Eastern Maine Medical Center hospitals will each receive 975. Maine General and Augusta will receive 825. Central Maine Medical Center and St. Mary's Hospital in Lewiston will each receive about 500. And 215 will go to A.R. Gould in Presque Isle. Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Jean Lambrew says priority was given to hospitals that have a significant number of COVID-19 patients.
Week two allows us to broaden that. We expect to be able to get to all hospitals that have registered with the U.S. CDC some vaccine in week two.
Maine is expected to receive 37,850 doses in week two, which includes both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine. And hospitals won't be the only recipients. Three home health agencies will receive 900 doses, 500 will go to first responders, and 100 to the Holton Band of Maliseets. Altogether, that's enough to vaccinate a little more than 50,500 people. An expected third allotment would bring that number close to 75,000 people. But Lambert says Maine's allocation still falls woefully short of what's needed for the very first phase of vaccine distribution, referred to as 1A.
The vaccines that we expect to get in these first 3 weeks don't even cover half of what is 1A, the healthcare workers and long-term care residents, which is what the U.S. CDC advisory group recommends.
Lambrew says questions persist about supplies of the COVID-19 vaccine, and Dr. Shah says how quickly Maine can progress through its vaccine plan will depend on how many doses it receives. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Well, 3 months into this academic year, the vast majority of Maine's public schools have managed to reopen classrooms, and health officials say they remain relatively safe. But as COVID-19 numbers rise in Maine, schools are now facing shortages of teachers and other staff. And with few reinforcements in place, administrators, teachers, and families say at times it's an overwhelming challenge. Robbie Feinberg has more.
Finding teachers has been an annual challenge for the Oxford Hills School District in Western Maine, but this year has presented a whole new problem.
It's not an easy time.
Superintendent Rick Kolpitz says the district began the year with about 3 teaching vacancies, not that unusual. But several teachers and a bus driver have resigned because of health concerns. On top of that, the district is now dealing with quarantines. Because of close contacts with COVID-19 positive people, 21 staffers across the district are now staying at home. And Kolpitz says with few substitutes to call upon, principals are scraping for help wherever they can, shifting music, art, and PE teachers into regular classrooms.
We're doing what we can to keep the quilt together, and it means taking squares from wherever we can find them and sewing them in. But it is a daily challenge to meet the needs of our staff who have, they're just as anxious as the public is. And we're working hard to address their anxieties.
The effects are being felt far beyond Oxford Hills. Staff shortages have forced schools from Dixfield to Gray to Rockland to temporarily move to remote learning. And many teachers say they're exhausted and burnt out as they take on more and more responsibilities.
The best way to describe it is that every day of the week feels like it is both a Monday and a Friday in late June. That's how tired teachers and educators are.
Doug Hodum is a science teacher and the president of the teachers' union in the Mount Blue Regional School District in Farmington. He says the added demands of remote and hybrid learning makes the workload feel like teaching 10 or 12 classes instead of 5 or 6. And he says with the shortage of teaching support staff, many educators feel like they can't keep up.
Think of it as if you're running and you normally run an 8-minute mile, if you move at that pace normally through your curriculum, now we're running like a 16 or 20 minute mile. So we're moving that much slower because, again, you're trying to juggle all of these unknowns and trying to balance student needs.
An area that's been particularly affected is special education. Carrie Woodcock, the executive director of the Maine Parent Federation, says many students with disabilities need even more assistance and guidance from teachers while using virtual platforms. But she says a lot of that responsibility has now fallen to parents.
Every phone call that comes into our agency right now is a crisis situation for families with education. They have hit a wall. And their students are regressing, they're seeing it regressing, they're getting behaviors at home, and they don't know what to do because they need more support for their children to be able to access their education.
Local and state officials have taken several steps to try to ease the shortage. Lewiston Superintendent Jake Langley says his district spent federal coronavirus relief funds to hire 4 long-term substitutes at each of its schools that fill in where needed.
What that means is these 4 people show up to the school every single day, not knowing what they're going to have to cover, not knowing where they're going to be put or have to move around to. But it allows for us to cover some of those unfilled positions, but also unexpected situations that have been caused by COVID.
The state DOE has also partnered with Eastern Maine Community College to train learning facilitators to assist in classrooms. And the Mills administration has also eased certification requirements for qualified teachers from other states and countries. In Oxford Hills, Superintendent Rick Kolpitz says that's made a difference as he's hired teachers from New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Florida in recent months. But Kolpitz says that while he sees educators working harder than ever this fall, he still worries about the long-term effects of these staff shortages, particularly on the most vulnerable students.
I believe that there could be significant gaps, particularly in kids who are from populations where they already had gaps prior to the COVID experience. I don't know how we could expect kids to advance significantly in a COVID environment when nothing is consistent.
In recent days, several schools have moved to remote learning through the new year as the virus continues to spread in Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Well, on December 2nd, dock workers at the Mack Point cargo facility in Searsport spilled about 5,000 pounds of plastic waste into Penobscot Bay. It had arrived in a large shipment from Northern Ireland bound for a waste-to-energy incinerator in Orrington. But the spill was kept under wraps until 6 days later when plastic started washing up on the beaches of nearby Sears Island. Murray Carpenter has our story.
On a chilly day on Upper Penobscot Bay, a crew of volunteers and a small team of professional cleanup workers are spread out on the sandy beach on Sears Island, picking up trash.
Well, what's washing up are little tiny chunks of plastic that seem to be crushed with some sort of fiber, like a cotton fiber.
Sally Brophy of Belfast is a volunteer with Upstream Watch, a local environmental group.
So there are these chunks of crushed cotton and little tiny, and most of it looked like little candy wrappers.
The cleanup started after a local resident walking on Sears Island on December 8th noticed clumps of plastic along the shore. He alerted local journalist Ethan Andrews, who posted photos on Facebook.
The first we knew of the spill was actually the indication from Facebook that somebody found material on the beach.
That's Henry Lang, the general manager of the Penobscot Energy Recovery Company, a waste-to-energy incinerator in Orrington.
We were all looking at it horrified, going, that's SRF.
SRF stands for Solid Recovered Fuel, and Lang's facility had just received a big shipment of it from a company called Regen Waste in the United Kingdom. It had been offloaded at Mack Point, the port just opposite Sears Island.
It was not a happy piece of information, and it certainly had us very concerned.
Lang said the material is mostly fine plastic film, a byproduct of recycling, mixed with bits of cotton and linen. The shipment of 100 metric tons arrived in more than 7,000 plastic-wrapped bales. He'd received a smaller trial run last year and says it burned well. On the afternoon of December 2nd, as the plastic was being hoisted from a ship's cargo hold to trucks for shipping to Perk, port workers dropped two large bales into Penobscot Bay. Each weighed about 2,500 pounds. Sprague Operating Resources, which manages the Mack Point terminal under contract to the state of Maine, declined to go on tape. But a spokesperson says the spilled bales quickly dropped out of sight and conditions were unsafe for divers to retrieve them. When divers did check the site later, they found no evidence of the plastic. Sprague did not alert Maine's Department of Environmental Protection. The DEP says it learned about the spill 6 days later, on December 8th, through a phone call from a concerned citizen. Sprague has hired a crew of cleanup contractors, but on Thursday, the half-dozen contractors were far outnumbered by volunteers mustered by Upstream Watch and Friends of Sears Island.
Do we want to be taking foreign waste to turn into energy that we subsidize in the state? That's a question we really have to ask.
That's State Representative Paige Ziegler, a Democrat from Montville, who was among those picking tiny pieces of plastic from the rockweed. Ziegler serves on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee and once introduced a bill to ban the use of polystyrene food containers.
The committee that I've been on, we've been dealing with solid waste for the last two sessions in particular, and we really have to look at this to see where this, we don't want the state to be a dumping ground. We want our environment to be protected.
To Sally Brophy, the Upstream Watch volunteer, the entire situation seemed avoidable.
There's a solution on every way down the chain for this. Don't wrap every little tiny thing in plastic, and then don't bale it up and put it on a ship and use fossil fuels to ship it across the ocean. It's crazy.
But for the companies involved, it's about cost. It's far more expensive for Regen to landfill waste in the United Kingdom than to ship it to Maine and pay Perk a fee of roughly $77 a ton to take it. Lang says Perk has already begun burning the waste. DEP, meanwhile, is investigating Sprague's response to the spill. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Murray Carpenter.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.